Jongens, goedenavond. Welcome. Dit is the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula 1. Ik ben Mark Daly en dit is mijn vriend en co-host Mark Hamilton. Hoe gaat het met jullie? Ja, Max Verstappen, winnaar bij de Dutch Grand Prix vandaag. En Mark, I won't torture you any longer, but yes, we have a race to talk about. And, well, it might not have been the most action-packed Grand Prix on the track, but I felt like it was a little bit getting back to normal after the drama that we had with the non-event in Belgium, after the drama we had in Hungary, after the controversy that we had in Britain. It's been a busy kind of 6 weeks or so. But first of all, before we get into it, how the heck are you? We're halfway through the Labor Day weekend here in North America. And that sadly means, well, I mean, for us who have kids, it's great because the kids go back to school on Tuesday. But sadly, it's kind of the unofficial end to summer, even though the first day of fall is still 3 weeks away. But how's your weekend been, sir?
It's been good. And I actually totally agree with your sentiment about the outcome of this race. To your point, maybe it wasn't super action-packed, but by the time it was over, I was kind of checking my limbs to make sure I was intact. Because to your point, after Belgium and Hungary and Silverstone, there was so much anxiety and frustration and anger bottled up after those events that it was good to get through a traditional, maybe processional Grand Prix. And I'm happy for that. And we'll get into all of the details. And we have tons of feedback from all of the folks within the Scuderia F1 community. But I'm doing great. Obviously, I don't have older kids. So my son's in daycare as normal on Tuesday. But you're right. Even though it's not like we've just come up back from a 2 month vacation, there is this sense of sadness when Labor Day weekend hits because obviously the summer's over. And for us in Canada, typically, Thanksgiving rapidly approaches. I think we're now 4 or 5 weeks away from Thanksgiving and then Halloween. And then it's the dark, dark, long, wet, dreary winter that we've both become quite accustomed to.
Don't remind me. Yeah, I know that's the one good thing about Canadian Thanksgiving is it gives us one extra holiday between the end of summer and the Christmas season, you know, sadly is going to come sooner rather than later. I mean, it's going to, I mean, I love the holiday season, but these things seem to get faster and faster every year. So I just want to kind of keep the pace down a little bit. But yeah, you know, going back to the race itself, after all the drama and controversy that we've seen going back to the middle of July at Silverstone, it was nice just to have sort of a normal weekend. But it was strange, even though the race was a little bit processional, obviously Mercedes could not match the pace of Max Verstappen, particularly, and Red Bull. It still had an interesting kind of flow to the race because I found that the race itself around the redesigned and the reformatted Zandvoort circuit, I felt that it still felt like there was a lot going on. And I have a bit of regret now because I really wish we kind of discussed this a little bit more with Bryson on Thursday night, but perhaps just maybe not having the benefit of seeing a Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort since 1985. And obviously this was the first running on the new layout. I really kind of wish we'd sort of delved into that with Bryson a little bit more to see what we could have expected perhaps from the aerodynamics and, you know, point of things, because I'm hoping next year will be more exciting with the new cars, because I think that, you know, great track, but with the current cars, maybe they just didn't make the most of what this track could have to offer.
Yeah, your thoughts? I absolutely completely agree. My opinion's continuing to evolve. I know, and I'll read through in a couple of minutes some of the comments from the community just with respect to their initial impressions after the race. My opinion's evolving. It's not dramatically different, I think, than I was expecting. I was very confident that we would have seen some contact on the front lap, maybe not necessarily between Lewis and Max Verstappen, but I was very confident that we'd see some contact among some of the back markers, that the field would get backed up. I had assumed, and I would have put money on it, that we would have seen at least one safety car that would have backed up the field and kept the race a little bit tighter as we got into lap 30, lap 40, lap 50. We didn't see that. And I think you'll make a great point too, that the cars that we saw on the track this year will be gone next year. The racing, the dynamics associated with the cars that we'll see next year should be very, very different. And one of the other stories that I saw as well is that the FIA is going to start evaluating a lot of the telemetry and data from the cars because they're hoping still to add an additional DRS zone to this track. But as a track, from a helicopter view, it looks fantastic. I love how tight it is. I like how twisty it is. I love how how unique some of the elements of the track are, and we'll obviously speak to the bank corners, but to me, I thought this was pretty special. And I think from an atmosphere perspective as well, I love the fact that the grandstands are almost positioned immediately on top of the track. It gives you very much that stadium feel that we get a little bit out of Mexico City every year that we have the opportunity to go there. But from an atmosphere perspective, I'm sure you can speak to this, it was absolutely exceptional. The track's still growing on me. I'm not ready to write it off. And I think you make a great point as well that next year's cars may add a very different dynamic. But ultimately, we saw Max win, which I'm sure you're excited to talk about. He's regained the championship. And other than that, I don't really, as an initial take, I don't have a lot to add. I do, if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind quickly, just to kind of set the stakes a little bit and set the context for the show, just read out some of the comments, because in the spirit of being ultra lazy and not wanting to prepare for this podcast, I asked the listeners to prepare for us. So here's some of their initial feedback. So I had posted this: Zandvoort was blank. Texas Tech Sean, faster Monaco. Friend of the show, Matt Sakaris, says, processional, it's Monaco with a cheaper backdrop, no straights, there won't be much passing on track. That said, the scene was unbelievable and will be so as long as Max is in the cockpit. And I did like the rolling bank corner enhance the aesthetic. Marcos effect, boring, the race was decided on Saturday, just like Belgium, only a huge bottle would make a Red Bull loose. The RB16B was planted to the track. Carlos, decent backdrop for a nap on a busy day. James Young, a local boy here in North Vancouver, as expected, great race, bit of a procession, but still lived up to the expectation. Evan, a race that I'm interested to see how much of a difference the 2022 cars will make, just as you said a moment ago. Michelle, better with Nico, great insight and button pusher, and I love it. Michael Buverhoff, orange, deplorable me, meh. Jill, Zandvoort was more like Planet Vort. Jack, a poor showing for Mercedes. Julie, epic, that too. Taking a look here, we have amazing. Julie, a dreamed result. Predictable, redemption day. Unwatchable due to the frenetic camera coverage, which I'll get to in a couple of minutes. Anticlimactic. And then finally from Josh, a race in the Netherlands. So that's kind of sets the table just with respect to the initial impressions that our listeners had.
Yeah, I think they pretty well covered all of it. And, you know, it was kind of funny because, you know, this, I think maybe everybody might appreciate this as I say this, because, you know, Americans, I think, usually get, I don't want to say accused, but I think it's well known that the Americans are very proud of their country and very proud to show off the red, white, and blue. But what I saw in Holland today comes awfully close to national pride that we see south of the border in the USA. I mean, the orange from side to side, you had King Willem Alexander and his Queen Maxima. They were there. You had DJ Tiesto waving the checkered flag. You had Michelle Davina, well-known YouTuber and artist, singing the Dutch national anthem live. I mean, the fireworks when Max crossed the finish line, and just the orange smoke. I mean, it was a party atmosphere. And as far as national pride, it was all to see at Zandvoort on Sunday. And a couple of things that I found a little bit kind of, a little bit funny, or amusing, I should say, from the race commentary was Crofty talking about like 25% of people arrived on bike, and 2% of the fans showed up in cars. I'm like, that's just the Netherlands. I mean, everything is close together. It's ideal for public transport. It's ideal for biking. It's small, compact. The train is right there. It's like, what, half an hour from Amsterdam. I mean, it's easy access, even though it's not right downtown. And cycling is a Dutch way of life. It's not just a phenomenon. It's a mode of transport, and it was really cool to see. But let's talk about that opening lap. And I have to admit, I was keenly watching Mr. Hamilton, Mr. Verstappen on row one, Max obviously on the outside, having pole position, ideal where you want to be, because being where it is, you know, it is on the sea. I think it's necessarily as dusty as it is, say, in the Middle East, for example. But Max was on the clean side of the track, angling his car into the Tarzan Bocht, the Tarzan corner, turn one. And it was obvious that that he was planting his car to take that line and just needed to get a clean start. And I thought at when the lights turned green, I thought that Max and Lewis pretty much nailed the start. It wasn't like one was pulling away from the other. Lewis was closing the gaps to Max. Bottas in P3, I thought did not start very well. He was slow off the mark, but just once those three guys kind of planted their cars and kind of established those first couple of positions going into turn one, it was pretty, I would say, hairy going down through the race order. And like you said in the opening there, Mark, I am just astounded that there was not more than a little bit of some minor bumps going on. We saw Fernando Alonso bumping with his teammates. We saw Antonio Giovinazzi putting one tire into the grass at the same place where we saw Nick Latifi go off in qualifying on Saturday. But miraculously, we did not see anybody crash, not just in turn one, but all the way around that first lap or two. And we didn't see a car, or a safety car, I should say, the entire race, which would have, you know, it would have made things interesting. But as far, if you're Jan Lammers and the organizers of the Dutch Grand Prix, if you're a fan of Max Verstappen, and obviously if you're Max Verstappen Red Bull yourself, it was not just a perfect day, but a perfect weekend. And of course, that is reflected in the championship. But before we talk about some of the other news, we're already 10 minutes into this thing. Let's just go down the final race classification for the 10 point pains at positions. Max Verstappen winning the race with a time of 1:30.05. He takes 25 points. Lewis Hamilton second. Valtteri Bottas was third to round out the podium. Pierre Gasly, I thought Pierre had a solid weekend, even though obviously he was finished a lap down, but very impressive from Pierre Gasly nonetheless. Charles Leclerc in fifth, Fernando Alonso sixth, Carlos Sainz seventh, Sergio Perez, driver of the day, starting from the pit lane and bringing it home in P8. I think that maybe gets a little bit overlooked. I mean, that obviously has championship implications. We'll talk about that shortly. Esteban Ocon, P9, another solid outing, I'd say, for Alpine. They seem to be coming into a bit of form. And then Lando Norris rounding out the top 10, and then his teammate Danny Ricciardo just missing out in P11. But it's funny where McLaren's been pretty strong. McLaren struggled all weekend long. Anyways, let's look now at the interesting the discussion points of the day. And damn it, we're going to be talking about half points the rest of the way here. Anyways, Max on top now, 224.5, just only 3 points ahead of Lewis Hamilton as 221.5. Valtteri Bottas 123, which is interesting because Lando Norris, I think, has legit shot for third in the championship. Lando, despite finishing P10, only a single point today, 114. So that is going to be a very interesting, as much as we're going to be watching Lewis and Max, obviously down the stretch here, watch for Bottas and Norris, whatever happens to Valtteri Bottas here on out. And then you have Sergio Perez rounding out 108. So, I mean, any one of those three drivers, I mean, we should say, I mean, even though Bottas is 123, Lando 114, and Sergio 108. So, I mean, I think that P3 in the drivers is completely wide open. So watch all three of those guys going down the stretch. Now, interesting where it comes now in the constructors. It's not really, despite obviously Sergio having to have that engine change and starting from the pit lane, it's is not entirely horrible in the constructors. If you're Red Bull, Mercedes 344.5, Red Bull 332.5, so still within reach, but they're going to have to try and stop hemorrhaging any points along the way. Ferrari 181.5, McLaren, Mercedes 170, and then Alpine with 90. So of course, as much as we're going to be watching Mercedes and Red Bull down the stretch, we're going to be watching McLaren and Ferrari. Mark, your thoughts on how the championship is, I don't want to say flip-flopped, but has changed a little bit. Are we seeing a little bit of equalization here just based on the fact that we had a very undramatic race compared to the last three?
I definitely want to get into that, but I think I need to give Max his flowers real quick. And it's funny because earlier in this year, we were criticized for being too aggressively pro Red Bull and pro Max, and then that swung. You guys are too aggressively pro Lewis and pro Mercedes. I like to think we bring a little bit of balance. Obviously, we're not credentialed media. We don't work for a team. We don't work for Formula One. And we have opinions, and I think sometimes we get caught up in the emotions and the narrative of the season. But I think in this case, I absolutely have to give
Well, we should start screenshotting our WhatsApp conversations during races. Anyways, go on.
I just want to give Max his flowers. This weekend was an impeccable performance for him. Obviously, he has a little bit more familiarity with this track because he's done some photo days there in a Formula One car. But ultimately, I don't think that really means anything. But he was perfect. He was fantastic in free practice. And of course, there was some disruption of free practice, so a lot of the drivers didn't get as much time to gain some familiarity with the track as you may normally have. Obviously, that incident with the Aston Martin and the fire was problematic, especially for Lewis, but he was fantastic. And I think the only instance all weekend where he stepped wrong was failing to activate DRS during qualifying. And I think had he done that, the gap between him and Hamilton would have been significantly greater. And I think that when you look at the qualifying classifications, it's a little bit charitable to Hamilton. And I think even for me, it gave me a little bit more optimism than was probably deserved going into the Grand Prix on Sunday, thinking it was going to be a little bit tighter. But Max was fantastic. He embraced the weekend. It was probably, and this is not something that I've ever seen as a challenge or an opportunity for Max, because I don't think he's somebody that struggles under pressure, but this was probably one of the most pressure-filled weekends he's ever experienced in Formula One. It's his first time racing at home. It's his first time on this track. There's 100,000 fans there, bathed in orange, and we saw the flares, we saw the jerseys, we saw the flags. So I think that alone was probably fairly significant from a pressure perspective. But the other piece too was, for the first time in his career, he's in the championship in a meaningful way, and a win gave him the opportunity to leapfrog 7 times world champion and defending champion Lewis Hamilton, and he didn't step a foot wrong. And to your earlier point, his start was perfect. In fact, I thought Lewis's start was so good that he may have jumped the light a little bit, but it only took a couple of corners before you knew Max was gone. And I could sense the dread and panic that probably overcame Toto and Mercedes, because we've seen that in other races this year where Max has that great start, he's on pole, or he sneaks past a Mercedes car and it's over. Because you knew, unless they had a really great strategy, unless there was a safety car, unless there was an incident, it was going to be incredibly difficult to capture or catch up to Max, because he doesn't make mistakes. And the car was dialed in. It looked fantastic. The package was great. I think it also reflects very badly on driver of the day, Sergio Perez. And I don't think that's a warranted title, but I just wanted to kind of back up and make sure that Max got credit for a fantastic weekend. And to your point, we've now completely closed up at least one of the championships. So Max has now scored 2 poles in a row. He scored 2 wins in a row. And again, at the end of the day, last weekend was an absolute abomination, but ultimately it counted in the standings and he secured some points. So he was able to stack some points in this ongoing championship. But I think ultimately, and we've talked about this before, the constructors is going to be decided not by Max and Lewis, because they seem to be in a world of their own in terms of this championship. They are in a world of their own, because if you look at the way that Sergio is performing and you look at the way that Valtteri is performing in the exact same or nearly the identical machinery, they're at a totally different level. Bottas just doesn't have the pace, and Perez is just making mistake after mistake after mistake. And we saw it this weekend. He couldn't get out of Q1. Early in the race, he locks up, gets a flat spot, has to go to the pit. You know what? I'm not going to give him driver of the day. He overtook a bunch of backmarkers and arguably the fastest car in the championship. What the hell was he doing at the back of the pack to begin with? Why the hell did he have to change tires? Those are unforced errors. So ultimately, you're right. The championship is tightening up. I think I'm still confident in my prediction earlier this year that we're probably going to see a split. It could be Max. It could be Lewis at this point. You know, with maybe 8 Grand Prix left, we don't really know. Every race is worth that much more, is that much more valuable. Every point counts so much more, which is obviously why Mercedes deployed their strategy to make sure that Lewis got that point for fastest lap. But I'm still of the mind that we might see the champion split this year. What about you?
Well, I'm going to just weigh in on that in a moment, because it's time to box, box, box as we take our first break, and we'll come back on the flip side in just a moment. 3 laps too late. That's right. Anyways, we'll be back in just a moment, so don't go away.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And what was the question you were talking about before? What did you want me to weigh in on?
Flat spotted tires? I don't know. The flat championship. Tires. Come on.
You know, it's I'm just being silly, of course. You know, I thought it was interesting, too, because when I was seeing Sergio starting from the pit lane, I thought, okay, well, maybe this is the weekend that we really start to see maybe a bit of clarity in where the Constructors' Championship is going to go. Because I think that looking at the Drivers' Championship, I think that we're getting a real good idea that this is still going to go down to the wire between Lewis and Max. And of course, the last couple of weekends have been obviously very, very, topsy-turvy with all the drama that we've seen for different reasons at the last three tracks. But, you know, Sergio, I think, is now... he's really pushing it. He knows what's at stake. And like you say, these unforced errors. And I was thinking as you were talking about it, that if you're Mercedes and, you know, you have that, this dilemma of what you're doing with the Valtteri Bottas, what you're doing with George Russell, do you really want to pull the trigger now? Because I think that we see the slight lead in the Constructors' Championship. And I think that if you're Mercedes, I think if you're being completely honest and neutral, just looking at what things are, where it's going and what Bottas has done this year compared to Perez, I think that just on the basis of what Bottas's record is just in general with Mercedes, he's going to be the more reliable, stable, dependable guy. You know, Perez, he's kind of shown it off and on this year. Like, he started a little bit kind of rough, which you might have expected. Then he kind of settled down. And now we see a little bit of, inconsistency again over the past couple of races. Of course, not all entirely of, his own doing and whatnot. But I think that if you're Mercedes, maybe where there's a lot of question marks around the Drivers' Championship, maybe you're starting to think, okay, I think we're seeing now a little bit of light in the Constructors, that if we do things right, that this might be a little bit more solid, more of an expectation to win this one, but definitely the one battle that we have the advantage.
Yeah, I do agree. And I'll just kind of backtrack on a point you just made there. As fun and sexy a topic as it is to talk about in-season driver changes, I don't believe Toto's going to make that move. I think that's hugely, hugely risky. I think logistically they could.
I agree.
I think they could bring George in. They could adapt the car to him. I think George could be successful. But if you look at Valtteri's last couple of races, let me just run down Valtteri's season so far. Third retirement, third retirement, 12th, fourth, third, second, third retirement, 12th, third. You take out those retirements and those two 12th place finishes, that's not a terrible campaign. And again, looking at the classifications, a little bit misleading, because he is nowhere near George. And I think he's benefited from the fact that Sergio struggled in a number of his races. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that you're going to get a lot more from George, and maybe introducing George to the equation introduces some friction with Hamilton, which becomes a distraction in itself. I don't think they're going to make that change. You look at Sergio over the past four races, he scored 4 points. And to your point, obviously he's been collected and there's been some contact, and that's not necessarily all his fault. But I think some of the things that we've seen in terms of qualifying performance, the fact that he went off during the formation lap in Belgium and caused the damage to the car, the fact that he had that brutal lockup today on the hards when they were clearly going with a long strategy, I think is problematic. So I don't think they're going to change anything, but I think it's really going to be difficult from a psychological perspective if Red Bull was to win a driver's title, but not the constructor's title. And it ultimately came down to the difference between Sergio and Bottas, who himself probably won't be in the Mercedes ride next year.
You know, it really is interesting, too. And I think that you made a great point in the first segment there, just talking about the performance that we saw from Max Verstappen is, you know, just talking about where these guys might be at mentally and where everybody's, you know, how things are shaping up. I think that this was a big statement race for Max Verstappen. And, you know, we've seen Lewis deliver at Silverstone year after year after year after year. And it's a big party there. And this was very much the Dutch version of it. Of course, it was only the first one, but you know, Max himself said it's not easy to live up to those expectations. I mean, everything that they had planned for this race was for a Max Verstappen / Red Bull party.
Absolutely.
And I mean, for the race organizers, it was an absolutely perfect outcome. It was a perfect weekend. And, you know, from that point, and it really, I think, reinvigorates this battle. And I think that if you're Lewis Hamilton, I think obviously Lewis has respect for Max. He knows how good of, you know, a driver Max is. But I think that if you're Lewis, if there were any maybe kind of like lingering questions as to how good is this guy and how good is he able to perform under pressure, you're maybe going away from this race thinking, huh, Max just did in Holland what I've been doing at Silverstone for all these years at the British Grand Prix in front of my own fans, you know, and he delivered all weekend long like I've been able to do. So, you know, obviously Lewis is going to, he realizes obviously he's got a big fight on his hand as it is, but I think this really kind of takes it to the next level. And then if you're Max himself kind of thinking at 23 years old, wow, did this just happen? Did I just do that? And I think it was the perfect race just for the championship, even though the race itself was not that exciting. It wasn't a classic. But I think, like I was saying, that just after all the other stuff that we've had over the past month, I think it wipes the slate clean. We're going next weekend to Monza, which is a classic track. We go into the tail end of the season now, basically neck and neck in the championship. And I think there's so many different threads to pull on, not just to between you know, stories as it comes to Lewis and Max, but also for the constructors and all these different things going on. And it's just, I really found myself excited looking ahead. You know, being a Dutchman myself, coming from a Dutch family, it was cool to see like the whole experience. And, you know, I had friends that were there this weekend and people say, oh, you got to come next year and all that sort of cool stuff. But I think it sets up the you know, at least next weekend really nicely.
I think it's deceiving because you and I, and obviously a lot of our listeners in the audience at home, have been watching Formula One for a few years, or at least they've been watching for a few years, and they've always known Max to be part of this series. You mentioned something a couple of seconds ago that really resonated with me. Max is 23 years old. This is his 9th championship season. He has, and here's a couple of interesting data points. He has now scored the most race victories, most Grand Prix victories in the history of Formula One without a championship, which could possibly change this year. Today was his 100th point finish, not his 100th Grand Prix, his 100th point finish. This kid is phenomenal.
Wow.
When you look at the data list of drivers in the sport, there's maybe four drivers that are younger than him. Obviously, Yuki, Mazepin, Stroll, who himself is deceivingly young because he entered the sport so early as well, but he joined in 2017. Yep. That was Max's fourth season. This kid is young. And if he runs deep into his career, like we see a lot of these talented drivers do, and when we talk about nutrition and sports psychology and medicine and exercise and all those different pieces, there's no reason to think that he might not drive until he's 40. I don't think he's got any side gigs or hobbies that are going to distract from Formula One. This kid could be around for another 20 years. Incredible. But yeah, just two quick data points. Mm-hmm. One, his 100th points finish, which is incredible. And now the most race victories, the most Grand Prix victories without a championship. And I think it's just inevitable, if not this year, then presumably next year or the year after, because he will score a championship and probably many of them.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. One other thing that they brought up during the race is that during the Grand Prix on Sunday, it was also the race where Max has already led 1,000
wow.
laps in his Formula One career. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, when you add that to all those stats that you just reeled off for a guy that's 23 years old, I mean, as much as I respect what Lewis has done, and that story is by no means over. I mean, what with Lewis just inking a new deal to stay at Mercedes, you know, I mean, Lewis obviously has a lot to contribute. He's not doing it just for fun. He's not doing it. Well, I mean, hopefully he's doing it for fun, but I mean, he's not doing it for
$50 million a year.
Or Yeah, I should say he's not doing it because, you know, that there's nothing left to do.
100%.
He's there.
He wants to score a championship. He wants to compete. You're absolutely right.
But the thing is, if and when Max wins that first championship, is this going to be something we're going to be looking at in 15, 20 years? You know, was this the big, you know, the guy that really started hot when he was young and then kind of like flamed out? Or is he potentially one of those guys that could, you know, maybe equal and better Lewis Hamilton? Of course, you know, this is a discussion we're going to have to park and talk about, you know, when, you know, Max's career, Lewis's career comes to an end in Formula One. But I mean, how many years have we been saying now that Max has all the pedigree, all the skills and all the markers of a potential Formula One champion? I think as much as I said, if Lewis had any lingering questions about that this weekend, I think very much for the rest of us that Max has proved once and for all he is legit. He's a world champion in waiting. We've said for the last couple of years he just needs the car. Obviously he has the car. So whether or not he can pull it off in, you know, however many races we have left before the end of the year, but it was
I'm going to lean into an NBA analogy. I don't know if this is going to work, but I kind of see sometimes Lewis as being Magic Johnson. Obviously, Magic Johnson enters the NBA. He storms right through to the finals, scores a championship with the Lakers in his first season. He has a phenomenal run. Mm-hmm. They run off 5 chips over the course of the decade. Lewis was very similar in the sense that he enters the sport in 2007. He misses the championship in his rookie year by a single point. The next year, 08, scores a championship. But then he goes through a 5-year dry spell where there's chaos and friction at Mercedes. He makes the McLaren. He makes the transition over to Mercedes. He was hugely and greatly criticized for doing that. But ultimately, he scores a championship there in his second year. But there is that 5-year gap. The way that I see Max's career playing out a little bit is a little bit more like Michael Jordan. And I think you would be foolish to try to argue that he's probably not the greatest of all time from an NBA perspective, but bear with me because I think the point being that Michael Jordan was drafted in 1986 by the Chicago Bulls for years mm-hmm. and years and years. He and that team could not get past the Detroit Pistons. They just kept running up against Isaiah Thomas and that team. And when they finally...
When they were at the peak,
when the Bad Boy Pistons were at their peak, and of course the Pistons won the title in 89, 90, in 91, they finally break through, and then it's just a torrent of championships. And I think that mm-hmm. it's a little bit like that for Max in the sense that he just happened to enter the sport in the midst of the Mercedes domination, that period of domination. And maybe it's kind of fading away. Hamilton's a little bit older. Red Bull's continued to develop their technology. They brought in an engine supplier that's been a really great marriage. But I feel like potentially he's on the cusp of that same kind of breakthrough. And again, the 2022 regs might level the playing field in a way that we maybe don't expect. But what we do know is regardless of what the aero looks like next year, they have a phenomenal power unit, which is something that they can build that car around.
Mm-hmm. Plus a car that's designed or headed up by a team that's run by Adrian
Great
Newey,
call.
Whose record
Great
in Formula
call.
One is right up there with all the other greats. And I mean, you put them up against the team that they have at Mercedes is just absolutely amazing. And there was something kind of rattling around in my head as you were talking there. But, I know what it was. You're just talking about Lewis, how, you know, he wins that championship at 08, and he has those 5 seasons where it kind of, and this was when McLaren were at their peak of just turmoil.
Oh,
and it was just, before we even get into like the really dark days when they, you know, they were just down at the bottom of Formula One, but the pre-Zac Brown era that we're in right now. But I mean, of course, this will be one of these things we can talk about after Lewis retires from Formula One, whenever that is in the future. But could you imagine that when Lewis made that switch to Mercedes? And I mean, this will be a fun one to have,
Love
of course,
it.
When he retires and hopefully, but could you imagine he hadn't gone to Mercedes at that time, said he went to Ferrari, and that whole run of championships with Mercedes would never have happened. I mean, this is, of course, like a completely bizarre parallel Lewis universe, but he could have been that guy that won that one championship, you know, when he was a young driver, and he could have been that guy that we talked about had great potential, but only had that one car, very much a Fernando Alonso, right? He runs off those 2 championships in 05 and 06. and then just was not able to get the car ever since. But I mean, Lewis, obviously a very different story. And of course, like I say, we'll have to see where he goes over the next couple of years before he hangs up the helmet and gloves. And of course, Max Verstappen. Anyways, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I just want to put this one out there for a second to let this one just marinate in your mind, Mr. Hamilton, is that Mercedes, they're eating a little bit of humble pie, saying that they got their strategy and tactics wrong at the Dutch Grand Prix. Anyways, time for a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment, so please don't go away. All right, welcome back to the podcast. As always, up to speed with Formula One, Mr. Mark Daly and Mr. Mark Hamilton, recapping a fairly uneventful but still a very important race in terms of the championship. I've got an interesting comment here. Well, two of them in the live chat. First comes from Michelle G. She says, do they set off the fireworks if Max doesn't win? Probably, if it was anybody else other than Lewis Hamilton, which I think Lewis got a very good response from the Dutch fans.
I mean, it was better.
Yeah,
than I think
I mean, I was wondering if exactly. I thought maybe he might
when
get the
boot. When the king
boot, I
has to address
muted.
The crowd, though, and ask,
you could. Yeah,
no,
sorry.
I was just
going to
say
ahead,
when you're king. And by the way, I did. And shame on me. Despite my political science degree, the fact that I've lived all over Western Europe, I did not know the Netherlands had a king and queen. But I thought it was very cool to see them in the garage with Max.
It was very cool. The old funny story, one of my best friends in Holland was an American fellow by the name of Dave. Anyways, one time where we were living, there was like a big festival every summer. Anyways, Dave was walking around one day. He just, you know, and just he got behind the wrong part of a cordon when it was going up. And then all of a sudden he found himself face to face with the Queen of the Netherlands. And what do you do if you're a down-to-earth, you know, heck selfie of a nice guy from Raleigh, North Carolina? What do you do when you come face-to-face with the Queen of the Netherlands? He smiled at her, put out his hand, and said, "Good afternoon, ma'am. My name is Dave." I love it. That's a great story. Anyways, I wanted to go back and just talk about what I just hinted at before the break here. And obviously, Mercedes has been so strong, not just with their drivers, but with their tactics and with their car and everything. And Red Bull, of course, have been very, very good with their tactics and strategies over the year, although they never have always had the car to consistently win races. And this year has been a little bit different. But I think the season ended today, I think more or less if we were saying who had the tactics, who had their strategy better over the course of 2021, I would give the slight edge to Red Bull. And Mercedes, I mean, they're just coming out and saying that they just didn't get it right when it came to to their tactics today. Toto Wolff told Sky Sports, he said, quotes, "We had, I think, a sniff of an undercut there, but we didn't time it right. I mean, at the end, you're always more clever. We didn't expect Red Bull to go on the hard tire because it was an unknown. We didn't drive the hard tire on Friday, and we thought we might be pushing them early with the soft, but it is what it is," end quote. What do you think? What do you make of that?
Yeah, I appreciate the humility. I think that this was obviously short of a flurry of safety cars or a Max era, which I think was always going to be very unlikely. I think the strategy was probably what they had on the whiteboard in the dressing room before the race, that look, we have an opportunity at the jump. We don't necessarily know what Red Bull pace is going to look like, but obviously ideally you get a jump from the jump and you get past Max in the first or second corner, and then you just continue to build on that lead, and hopefully you keep Bottas behind Max to continue to harass him and function as a distraction. Immediately before the end of the first lap, by the second lap, by the third lap, it was clear that Red Bull had remarkable pace, or at least Max had remarkable pace, and they were never going to put themselves in a position where they were going to be able to pass them. So strategy ultimately was going to be the tool that they used. And obviously the strategy didn't work out. And I think kind of as a backup or a secondary opportunity, you had a position where when Max was carving back through the field, there was a moment where Bottas could potentially have functioned to back him up and give Lewis the opportunity to get back into the race. But ultimately, once again, and this is something I've been super critical of Bottas about, is that whenever he's been asked to do that, to back up a competitor, to give Lewis the opportunity to get racy, he's failed to do so. And if you look at this today, how many corners was Max behind Bottas? And of course, Bottas was on inferior tires, but how many corners was he behind him? Two, before Max was able to just storm by. And of course, he had better pace, he had a better engine, he had better tires, but I would have expected more. I would have demanded more out of Bottas in terms of backing up Max, but I like the humility here. And one of the things I took note of as well is that in the media pen after the race, they were talking to Lewis, and Lewis gave They gave Red Bull all the credit in the world. Their pace was phenomenal. They were extremely fast. They had everything dialed in. And I think from this, you just pack up and move on. And obviously, there's some tracks that are coming up that should prove more fruitful to Mercedes in terms of the way that they build and design their car. But we'll see, because, you know, when we flash back to the summer break, I kept saying that the driver who wins two of the first three races after the championship is probably going to win after the summer break is going to win the championship. And Max has done exactly that. So I don't necessarily know what's going to happen in Imola or in Monza a week from now that's going to change the direction of this championship.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, I think we might even have to extend that a race based on the farce that we saw in Belgium last weekend, what with the half points and all that, that stuff. But yeah, it truly was remarkable how the Red Bull, especially Max's car, looked like it was on rails. And I thought it was interesting too. And sometimes I always take Lewis's comments on race radio with a little bit of pinch of salt, because sometimes I don't know how, you know, accurate they are, because sometimes I wonder if it's a little bit of psychological warfare on the part of Lewis and Mercedes, just to kind of maybe try and misdirect to what the true situation is. But I thought it was interesting after five laps, the way that Max is already a couple of seconds ahead of Lewis, and Lewis is, you know, he says, you know, these tires aren't going to hold up under this pace. And it was interesting too, because it just, maybe this is just me maybe looking for something that maybe isn't necessarily there, but it seemed like there was maybe just a note of, I wouldn't say exasperation, but maybe a note of concern in Lewis's voice that maybe, yeah, you know, it's just not going to work out for us today.
Did you, by the way, and this is a great point to, or great time to transition to this, but did you pick up on that, that comment that Max had made over team radio towards the end of the race? He'd made a note when the gap had extended to about 3.8, 3.9 seconds. He'd made a comment over the radio to the Red Bull team staff saying, is he, referring to Lewis, complaining about something or what? Inferring that Lewis was probably behind him, because I think he was beginning to see that gap increase, but was inferring that Hamilton was probably complaining about tires, which is what he was notorious for doing. But I think you're right. I think Lewis was pretty much resigned early on that if he was going to win this race, it wasn't going to be from raw pace.
You know, and another interesting thing is, before I get onto that, I just wanted to read out, I think this is an interesting one. This is from Charlie Tinkler in the YouTube live stream. Anyways, Charlie has to say, where do they get the data for these ridiculous tire performance infographs? Oh. I can't understand how they continue to use this and how it's never being close to correct. That and that other one, like the overtaking infographic. I mean, it seems that's grossly off base as well. None of them seem to, you know, measure up to reality in the
I completely agree. One, I've been campaigning that they should remove those infographics from the screen since they were introduced in either, was it 19 now? 19 or 20?
They've been out a couple of years.
It's a disservice and it's disinformation to fans, because it's purely simulations and models. And I'm very curious to who's creating that data. Is it Sky? Is it the TV networks? Or is it the FIA and Formula One and the teams? Are they compiling data points to come up with that information? Because the other thing is, if I'm a team and I know what the durability or the longevity of my tires are, that's very important data that I don't necessarily want my rivals to know. So my sense is that it's probably data that's being simulated and created by the network, but I'm going to take this one away and get to the bottom of it, because I think that's a really great question.
Yeah, you know, they should get the folks from Codemasters in on that, because, you know, the tire infographics that they have in the F1 video game seem to be a little bit more accurate than this. But I'm totally on board with what Charlie's saying. Anyways, this one I think is kind of interesting. I just wanted to throw this one at you. Valtteri Bottas briefly nabs the fastest lap of the race in the single point, despite being told by, over race radio to back off and, just basically abort after sitting two purple seconds. sectors. Obviously, they wanted Lewis to get that single point. I don't know how much Valtteri backed off in sector three, but I kind of felt that when he still set the fastest lap of the race, I couldn't help feeling like that was Valtteri maybe kind of flipping Mercedes the bird a little bit, the Top Gun, Ghost Rider requesting permission for a flyby and the whole spilling the coffee thing, if for those of you who love Top Gun. But anyways, I couldn't help but think that was a little bit of, Valtteri kind of, making a bit of a statement to a Mercedes. Yeah.
I've got nothing to add on that one at all. And it was interesting too.
I was expecting a little bit of a hot take then.
So I think you're right. I think there was some frustration there. And it's funny because his radio messages are usually pretty short. They're pretty brief. Copy, copy, copy. But in my head, he's saying F you, F you, F you, F you. Because obviously, I think he felt he was brought into pit to get fresh tires in an effort to go after that fastest lap. And I think ultimately that wasn't why he was brought in. He was brought in so that he could ultimately function as a block on Perez to make sure that Perez couldn't chase down that fastest lap point and steal that away from Hamilton. Because I think the team, Mercedes especially, recognizes that every point in the championship matters. And with the strategy that Max was on, he was never going to be able to chase that. And I think it was important, obviously, for Mercedes to make sure that Sergio didn't get it. But even more important that if they were going to score that fastest lap point, it had to go to Hamilton because he's going to need every point he can get in this this championship.
I've really come around to this whole single point for the fastest lap. I know that we made some comments earlier in the season, which I wouldn't say we got put on blast for, but certainly we got called out by some of the people, which is fair enough. I respect their opinions, but we weren't really too warm on it. But especially as time goes on, it certainly adds an interesting dynamic. Agreed. Because Bottas's fastest lap was obviously a track record. He set it on lap 69. It was a 1:12.5. Then Lewis on the final lap blows it out of the water by 1.5 seconds, almost. Lewis setting a time of 1:11.1. And Max set the fastest lap on lap 60. And mind you, this is on the hard tires. Max's fastest lap was a 1:13.2. Wow. So Lewis was basically, you know, 2 seconds faster than Max. I mean, that is amazing. And even Perez, his fastest lap was set on lap 59. His was a 1:13.45. So, quite a big difference there. But yeah, certainly, I mean, it is an interesting twist to the championship. And again, it just shows that how serious these two teams are considering this this championship and how it really could go down to the wire. And very much like, we don't know what's going on. We're going to Monza next week, then we're going to Russia, we're going to Turkey, we're going to the USA, we're maybe going to Mexico, we're maybe going to Brazil, then Saudi, and then Abu Dhabi. Sounds like we're going to go to Qatar before Saudi. There's a lot of moving parts in this back end of the schedule. And I think that the teams recognize this. As much as they recognize that this is going to be probably a pretty tight championship, that who knows, we might still lose a race here. We've seen Japan go. We've seen other races go this year. And I think this is coming to the point that very much in this bizarre pandemic world that we live in, that, in Formula One terms, that at any rate, that these teams and these drivers realize we have to maximize the amount of points we're taking
into
the track each and every weekend, because who knows, we drop a race, we have a bad weekend. That might be our season. Right?
And I reflected back earlier today on some of the things that we've already seen this year. I think we talked after those race weekends about the fact that we don't know what the rest of the championship's going to look like. We don't know that if we're going to see a 23 race calendar. I flash back obviously to Baku, because I think that was a big one. And ultimately we talk about how tight the championship is, but because of a tire failure, Max left that race with no points. And ultimately, had Lewis been able to get a great start from that safety car and not initiate an unforced error that saw him fall out of the points, the championship could be very, very different. But I think the point being that any mistakes from this point onwards could swing the championship irreversibly one way or the other. And I think what I'm really seeing out of both Lewis and Max right now, and I know I touched on this a little bit earlier, is especially in the case of Max, is he just seems so focused, so dialed in. He's not making any mistakes. And I know this sounds super cliche, but he seems like a Max. And likewise, Lewis looks exceptional as well, but the two of them are in a completely different class. And again, I talked about this earlier. When you look at the drivers that are driving almost identical machinery, Bottas and Sergio, they're in a whole different championship. They're in a different class than we're seeing from Lewis and Max Verstappen at this point.
You know, just to maybe just to build on what you were just saying here about the, you know, we don't know how many races we have left, and there's, I wouldn't say desperation, but certainly a focus from everybody involved to just, you know, try and bring home as many points as you can. Is I would really hate for the championship to be decided for Lewis or decided for Max just because we lose.
Agreed. You know,
And I mean, obviously, public health and public safety has to be the most important factor in any of this, but I would hate for it to come down because, you know, you still had to win as many races as you needed to beat your opponent, but it would have, I don't want to say an artificial feel to that championship, but it would certainly feel like it would... It took something away from the season. I certainly hope it doesn't come
down
to that.
Just to add something as well, Lewis has won one of the last nine races. That's the worst, and that's not a bad stretch because he's scored a ton of podiums, but that's the longest stretch with a sole Grand Prix victory since his McLaren days at the very, very, very end.
That's amazing. That is an amazing stat considering what Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton have become notorious for over the past, almost basically the last decade, right? Anyways, Mark, I think as we come to close to closing it up and turning off the lights on another show and another race recap, you know, this is maybe a little bit cheeky on my behalf, but watching qualifying on Saturday afternoon, watching the two Williams cars, was it very much a situation of Nick looking at what George did and saying, anything you can do, I can do better? And I thought it was so unfortunate for both of those Williams drivers. I know that George still qualified 11th, but both of them were looking good to have a very, very solid qualifying.
They
George
were both
looked
in
like
Q2.
He was at least going to get into Q3. They were looking really, really good. And I'm being cynical. I'm being silly about it. But, aside, I was disappointed because I have a soft spot for Williams. They were the team when we were growing up back in the day, and it was looking good for them. And it was just a real shame. But, it just goes to show you that you put a tire wrong and it didn't have to be by much. And Nick putting it off. And I mean, George was lucky he didn't damage his car. Nick obviously getting more damage on the car, but certainly spoiled what was looking to be a very, very promising afternoon for both Williams, in the
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I had a couple of other bullet points to hit on here real quick. One of them was Williams this weekend. To your point, they were really looking to build on a couple of tremendous weekends. We obviously talked about that Hungary was something of a breakthrough for that team, and they were able to build on that in Belgium. For both of those cars to break into Q2, to me, it's a reflection that both of them are developing. I think Latifi's seen some real growth in the second half of the season, but I think it also demonstrates something that we've talked about a lot, which is the cars continuing to evolve. And this isn't the same dog that they were taking to every Grand Prix weekend back in 2019. But a couple of other quick points here as well. You touched on this right off the start. Gasly quietly continuing to put together an absolutely fantastic season. When his contract is up eventually, I think this is a guy who is going to chase or fetch a serious bag from another team if Red Bull don't find the means to secure him. Obviously, we talked, or we maybe didn't talk, but Kimi Raikkonen makes the announcement last week that he's retiring. Unfortunately, he tests positive for COVID. He is double vaccinated, so he should be okay. He's not showing any signs of symptoms, but he did test positive. So he is hiding out in his hotel room, which gave Kubica the opportunity to sit in a Formula One car for a Grand Prix for the first time this year. I was a little bit heartbroken as a Latifi fan that he managed to get past Latifi in the final lap of the race. And then I think my only other comment, although good job, Kubica, I think obviously that he's had a very interesting career. But I think the other major point for me as well is the weekend was a disaster for Aston Martin. Lance Stroll qualifies 12th, finishes 12th, doesn't look racy, wasn't taking risks. Vettel has a has a mechanical failure, an engine failure during practice. The car's on fire. He himself is saddled or responsible for putting out the fire. It was just a messy, messy weekend for Aston Martin. I think this is quickly becoming a season that they want to put behind them.
They've become a very, very frustrating team to watch.
Absolutely.
I know that you and I were very, very, you know, bullish on them, you know, before the start of the season, that this was a team we really wanted to see do well, obviously with the Canadian connection involved there, both on and off the track. But yeah, they've become a very, very frustrating team to watch over this year. And I hope that they really get it sorted out. And obviously, Lawrence Stroll is going to hope they'll be wanting to see that as well, considering the vast amount of money that that he's invested. But, you know, certainly from that point of view, it maybe is kind of still early in that that project. I mean, it might take a little bit of time off the track. I mean, they're still going to be going into that new facility of theirs, so it still might take a little bit of time to, you know, before it starts to bear fruit. Sure. Let's put it that way. And, you know, let's just maybe just mention again, Robert Kubica, decent weekend for a guy that wasn't expecting to get into the car. And it was interesting, too. I was reading some comments from Kubica himself, that when he saw the phone call coming from the team, he thought he was the one that had tested positive
for
COVID. So, he was, I mean, he was obviously, you know, pleased in one regard, one aspect to be able to actually drive, but it wasn't actually the phone call that he was expecting.
So
life sometimes throws curveballs at you, and hopefully Kimi turns out okay. Hopefully he'll be in the car next weekend.
I hope so. And for all those fans in Italy, because obviously he won a championship with Ferrari. He was a big part of that team over the past 10, 15 years. Yep. I hope he gets the opportunity to race next week, so he gets that send-off that he deserves.
Me too.
I'm just on that point of Ferrari as well. I don't know that this was necessarily a hot take, but I was pretty convinced that Ferrari was going to start putting a gap between them and McLaren as the second half of the season progressed. And that's exactly what we're seeing. They're 11.5 points up. And then finally, just talking about that Ferrari ecosystem, disaster of a weekend for Haas. The two drivers sparring in public, a terrible, terrible look for that team. And I think as a lot of fans do believe, Mick needs to get out of that situation. It's not a great place from a logistical perspective, from an infrastructure perspective, from a car perspective. I don't trust that team in terms of nurturing him from a development perspective. But the challenge is, where does Ferrari put him ultimately? Because it seems like they've got a great lineup with the core Scuderia right now.
Yeah, who knows? Do you put him in as a reserve driver? But then again, I mean, a guy as young as Mick Schumacher is, and the potential talent that he has, I mean, sure, you get him out of that seat at Haas, but then he's not getting race miles.
Reps in a bad team,
and that's what he needs.
Surrounded by bad resources, is probably better than no reps at all.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a tough call, and, you know... Yeah, not easy for Mick. Anyways, I think one thing I want to mention before we signed off, going to Monza next weekend, going to be very interesting. That's obviously a track that is basically flat out most of the way around. I'm really going to be interested who's going to have the advantage there. Is it going to be Red Bull? Is it going to be Mercedes? And depending on which car it is, how much is that advantage going to be? I mean, it's going to be fun to watch. I mean, Monza is one of the classics. It is a power circuit. There are not too many corners. We have that very sharp chicane, and then you have the Lesbos, which are kind of fun to watch. And of course, Parabolica is one of the all-time great corners to watch. Well, maybe not if you're Charles Leclerc in 2020. I mean, that big crash there, but really, really great track to watch. And again, like very much like Zandvoort today, old school, very narrow. I thought it was very interesting to see like a Zandvoort just, you know, I mean, it's basically what, about 2.5 car widths was the width of the track. And I love some of the comments that you made on, I can't remember, was it on the podcast or was
somewhere.
On social media? Just a real, somewhere. It was a real organic and natural feel, and very much that some of these modern tracks that we see, that some of them have their own, charm and worth to them.
But they feel over cutter.
Yeah, and they feel over-designed at times, and that's why that I'm not ready to write off Monza. Sorry, not Monza, Zandvoort. I think that we have to just park it for a year, see what it's like in the new cars before we really... you know, render a passage.
And one final point before we sign off, we're going into Monza, we're going into the Italian Grand Prix, and just in time, we have a special guest joining us this Thursday, which I'm excited to promo. Vincenzo Landino of the Landino Group will be joining us. We'll be talking all things sports marketing, branding, NFT, and all kinds of modern concepts that I certainly don't understand, but I'm sure he's going to be able to help clarify for both me and each of our audience.
Plus, being Italian, he will give us a real, I think, an insight on what it is, what Ferrari means to Italy, and just the passion behind it. I mean, Monza is one of the as good as the atmosphere was in Holland today, I think that that Monza still sets the gold standard as far as, you know, that passion, that atmosphere, and it's always great to see, especially at the podium celebration. Don't know what it's going to be like in terms of fans in the stands. I mean, obviously, it can't be any worse than last year when it was basically friends and family, but we'll see. We'll see next Sunday, pardon me. Anyways, Mark, that's all I've got for tonight. I think that unless you got something else, we'll wrap it up here. And guys, thank you so very much for listening to the show, for watching on YouTube. It looks like the chat's going on pretty good there. Apologetic, didn't get a chance to address most of those. Anyways, as Mark said, we'll be back on Thursday night with Vincenzo. Until then, get in touch by all means, scooteryf1pod@gmail.com, on Twitter at scooteryf1pod. Enjoy the rest of the long weekend. Enjoy your week. We'll talk to you guys again very, very soon. And bye for now.